The previous Mishnah taught, based on the fact that the example of a part of a dead body that the Torah uses to show that even a small part of the dead body can be a source of impurity, the example the Torah uses is a bone. And we learn from there that only a part of the dead body that was there since the person was born, and also is not something that grows back immediately when it's cut off or broken, only those parts of the body that fulfill both of those conditions would be sources of impurity. So for example, hair or a person's nails, since when they are cut, they just grow back, they are considered to be different to bones, and therefore they would not be a source of impurity, as well as teeth, since teeth a person is not born with, unlike his bones, they would also not be a source of impurity. That having been said, the Mishnah ended off by saying that as long as the teeth or the hair or the nails are attached to the rest of the dead body, they would transfer the tumah of the dead body. And the status that they have is the status of a yad. This is something that we came across in Maseches Kelim a number of times. A yad is considered to be a kind of handle or an extension of the main part of the item. So even though intrinsically it's not something that is able to become tomei in and of itself, but as long as it's attached to the rest of the dead body, it's considered to be an extension of the dead body itself. And this Mishnah elaborates, ketzad, how so? How does this law come into practice? Hameis mevachutz, if there's a dead body outside of a house, outside of a room, usoroi bifnim, and only the hair of the dead body, let's imagine that the hair is quite long, and the hair of the dead body is inside the house, underneath a particular roof. The Mishnah says, habayis tomei, anything which is inside of that house or inside of that room would be tomei, because the hair succeeds in transferring the impurity of the dead body to everything which is underneath that roof. Etzem sheshalov kzayis basar, likewise a bone that is attached to flesh which is at least the size of an olive. In general, a single bone cannot transfer its impurity via tumas oihel. If somebody touches it or carries it, they would become tomei. But if it's less than a quarter of a kav, a large volume of bones, then it can't transfer its impurity via oihel. However, a piece of flesh which is the size of an olive can transfer its impurity via tumas oihel. Now, since the bone is considered to be an extension of the flesh, hichnes mektsasim b'fnim, even if he only brings in a part of the bone alone inside the house, such that the habayis ma'al of the roof of the house is over it, even though all of the flesh is outside of the house, tomei, nevertheless, everything underneath that same roof would become tomei, because the bone is considered to be a yad, an extension of the flesh, and therefore transfers the tumah of the flesh via the roof which is on top of the bone. Continues the Mishnah, Shnei Atzamais, if there are two bones, Valem, Kshnei Chatzayzesim, Bosar, and each of the two bones is attached to a piece of flesh which is half the size of an olive, at least according to the opinion of the Chachomim at the beginning of the Perek, that two half pieces are able to combine to transfer tumah at least in the same way. Hichnes mektsasal mibifnim, if he brings in a part of each of the bones to be inside the house, abayis mahal aleihem, and the roof of the house is over them, tomei, everything underneath that same roof would become tomei, because those two bones are considered to be extensions of the two pieces of flesh, which therefore combine to transfer tumah to everything underneath that same roof via tumas oihel. The Mishnah ends off now with adding an important point that something is considered to be a yad and an extension of the rest of the item only if it is naturally connected. But hoy tchuvim bidei odom, if the flesh and the bone were stuck to each other via a person manually, then tohar, then the things underneath the house would still be pure. She'ein chibur odom chibur, because at least with regards to limbs and different parts of a body that a person attaches to each other and connects, that's not considered to be a sufficient attachment to now be viewed as one item, with the bone being an extension of the flesh. Mishnah Dalet, we learned towards the beginning of the previous perek, the previous chapter, that midiraisa, a revius, a quarter of a loig, which is a liquid volume of blood that came out of a dead body, transfers its impurity via tumas oihel. On the other hand, blood which comes out of an alive person certainly is not considered to be a source of impurity, and certainly not via tumas oihel. Now we came across what is called dam tavusa. Dam tavusa refers to blood that partially exited the person's body while he was still alive, and partially exited the person's body after he died. And midrabbanon, this is considered to be a source of impurity that can be transferred even via Tumas Oihel. And in this Mishnah, we're going to see four different opinions as to the exact definition and when this rabbinic stringency applies. Ezo dam tavusa, what is considered to be dam tavusa, that midrabbanon would be a source of impurity that can be transferred even via Oihel, by being under the same roof as other items. The first opinion, hames sheyotzam emenu shminis b'chayol v'shminis b'maisoi, a dead body from whom a eighth of a loig, which is half of a quarter of a loig, so half of the minimum amount which is needed, exits the person's body while he is still alive, and half of the amount, which is an eighth of the volume of a loig, exits the person's body after he dies. Div Rabbi Akiva, that's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Now, it's pretty impossible for it to be exactly half-half, but the point is, as long as there is a chance that the majority of the blood that is in this mixture that makes up this minimum amount of a revius exited the person's body after he died, then this stringency midrabbanon would apply. If we know that the majority of the blood exited the person's body whilst he was still alive, then even midrabbanon, this blood would be pure and it would not be a source of impurity. This is the first opinion. The second opinion, Rabbi Yishmael says, revius b'chayav, revius b'maisai. It must be that a quarter of a loig of blood exited the person's body while he was alive, and a quarter of a blood exited the person's body after he died. And then, nital mizel mizel revius, after the two bloods were mixed together, a quarter of a loig, half of that mixture was removed, and now there is blood which makes up the volume of a quarter of a loig, which is the minimum amount to transfer it to tumah via oihel, and it was made from a mixture that came from blood that could become tomei midoraisa. According to Rabbi Shmuel, it must be that we're based off of blood that once was able to be tomei midoraisa, even according to the Torah, which means that the entire volume of a revius exited the person's body after he died, just that it got mixed with other blood. And now there is less than a revius of blood which exited the person's body after he died, because part of the blood of the mixture has been taken away. But only if it comes after a basis of a quarter of a loig of blood that exited the person's body after he died, only then would there be room for the stringency that applies midrabbanon. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Huda says, Zevozeh Kamayim. Both of these cases that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel talked about, the blood is considered to be like water. It's certainly not a source of impurity, even midrabbanon. And the reason for Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Huda is because he understands that this stringency midrabbanon only applies if included in that blood is the drop of blood that exited the person's body as he died. At that moment of death, the blood that exited the person's body, that needs to be within the blood for it to be a source of impurity, even midrabbanon. And it seems like Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Huda assumes that in the cases that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel discussed, this is not necessarily true, because it could be that that remains on the person's clothes or on his body, but it's not mixed with the pile of blood that is under discussion and has a volume of a quarter of a loig. Ezo dam tavusa, what would be a case of dam tavusa where it would be a source of impurity midrabbanon? For example, tsolov, somebody who was hung, he was put to death by being hung, shedomish shises, that his blood is flowing out of his body in a continuous flow. It appears as though we're talking about a case where after he was hung, then they caused him to bleed seriously, and the blood was flowing out continuously, v'nimtza tachtov revius dam, and there is a quarter of a loig of blood found underneath the person in a puddle, and because of the way that the blood was flowing out continuously, it's almost certain that included in the blood below the person is the blood that exited his body at the moment of death. In that case, tomei, this blood would be impure, although it's only tomei midrabbanon, because part of the blood exited the person's body while he was still alive. The majority of the blood did come out of the person's body after he died. But this doesn't make up the full minimum amount of a volume of a quarter of a loig, and therefore it's only tomei midrabbanon. Now, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Huda adds another important point, in which he explains why it's so important that the blood exit the person's body in a continuous flow. Because aval hames shedomei minateif, if it was a regular dead person who was bleeding, but the blood was dripping outwards in individual drops, one after the other, as opposed to a continuous flow. And then a quarter of a log of blood is found underneath him. Even if the majority of the blood came out of the person's body after he died, tahar, that would not be a source of impurity, even midrabanan. And the reason for this is an important concept called kamo botel. That is to say, once the first drop of the blood came out of the person's body and he was still alive, so this drop of blood is not a source of impurity, it's fully pure. And then another drop came out of the person's body, and that also came out of the person's body while he was still alive. So now essentially we have two drops of blood that are pure, and so on, until the person actually dies, and then a drop of blood comes out which potentially could be a source of impurity, just that it's too small in and of itself. And when that singular drop falls into the blood that's already been collected underneath, so if we look at that mixture of blood at the bottom, the majority of that blood is totally pure. And it nullifies the singular drop that just fell into it, and that singular drop gains the same status as the rest of the blood, which is pure. And then the next drop of blood drops into it, and the exact same thing occurs. And when each drop joins the mixture, it essentially becomes pure and cannot be a source of impurity anymore. So even if ultimately the majority of the blood in that mixture exited the person's body after he died, since when the blood joined the mixture, it was nullified and therefore considered pure, it gains the status of the rest of the blood, which is pure, all of that blood together would not be a source of impurity. Rabbi Yehuda says, now we come to the fourth and final opinion of the definition of dam tevusa loichi. This is not the case, and in fact, it's quite the opposite. Elo hashoyseis tahar, in the case which Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yehuda described of the blood flowing continuously from the person's body, in that case, the blood underneath would not be a source of impurity, it would be pure, v'hamanateif, whereas in the case where the blood drips outwards in individual single drops, tome, it would be a source of impurity. And we'll begin by explaining the second part of Rabbi Yehuda's statement. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion in several places throughout the Mishnah, in other parts of the Mishnah as well, that min b'minoi eino botel. Something cannot be nullified in a mixture of the same type of substance. So for example, milk and meat are considered to be different things, and therefore the meat is able to nullify the milk. However, blood and blood is considered to be the same substance. So one kind of blood, which happens to be pure, does not have the power to nullify other blood, even if the other blood is supposed to be impure. Since the actual substance that we are discussing is the same thing, they are both blood, Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that there's no such concept of nullification, and therefore, even though each drop came out individually and joined a larger amount of blood which was pure, it would not be nullified, and therefore, ultimately, if the majority of the blood in that mixture did exit the person's body after he died, then it would be tomei midrabanan. Now, the reason why Rabbi Yehuda argues in the case where the person was hung is because he understands that even in that case where the blood was flowing outwards, there is still a possibility that the blood that came out of the body at the moment of death is not included in the blood at the bottom. Only in a case where we are certain that the blood that exited the person's body at the moment of death is included in the blood, only if we're certain about that would the blood be a source of impurity, midrabanan, that can be transferred even via tumas oihel, via being under the same roof. Mishnah Vov, if a dead body or a piece of a dead body large enough to transfer its tuma via oihel is found inside of a particular room in a house, and there is no opening, no door, no window that is open on the side of that room, midoiraisa, the tumor remains inside that room, and it doesn't spread to the other rooms inside of that house, because they are considered to be underneath a separate roof. The tumor is contained within this room, and there's nowhere for the tumor to leave and be spread any further. However, any opening that is at least the size of a tefach by a tefach would allow the tumor to, so to speak, escape. Obviously, it doesn't actually work like this. The impurity is not something physical, but it's easier to describe it in this way, that the tumor, so to speak, escapes through that opening, which is called a peseach tefach. It is an opening of at least a tefach by a tefach, and it would spread through that opening to the room, which is next to it on the other side of the opening, of course, as long as there is a roof on top of that area. Now, midrabanan, there is a concept that we'll come across throughout the whole Masechta of soif tuma lotzeis. Soif tuma lotzeis refers to a concept that even if the room does not have any openings, however, it has a door or a window, through which the dead body is going to be carried soon. Currently, the dead body is in that room and it's totally closed. However, when they want to bring the dead body out of the room, it's clear that they're going to bring it through this door. So since Soif Tumalotseis, which is literally translated as the impurity, is ultimately going to end up going out, and it's going to go out through that door, already from now, even though the door is currently closed, Midira Bonon, the tumor spreads through that door already, such that if there is a roof on the other side of the door, anything underneath that roof would also become Tomei. This is a stringency Midira Bonon called Soif Tumalotseis. What happens if there are a number of openings in that room? Either there are two doors, or there's a door and a window. It could be that they're going to carry the dead body or the piece of the dead body through the window, and it's going to go through that exit from the room. So to the extent that it's not clear through which opening the dead body or the piece of the dead body is going to be removed from that room, the tumor would actually, Midira Bonon, spread through all of the openings. However, if it is clear and it has been decided through which opening the dead body is going to be removed from that room and taken later on, then the tumor would only go through that opening, and the other openings, although it's possible to take the dead body out of the room through those openings, since it's already clear that the dead body is not going to be taken and transported through those other openings, the tumor does not spread through those openings, and it spreads only through the opening, the door or the window, through which we know the dead body is going to be carried and transported through. This Mishnah is coming after all of that introduction, assuming we know all of that already. And the Mishnah is going to teach that this is only true, let's say there are three openings, three doors through which that dead body can be removed from the room. So until the person makes it clear and decides through which door the dead body is going to be taken through, the tumor spreads through all of the doors Midira Bonon and would go to any room adjacent to any of those doors. As soon as the owner of that house or the person responsible decides and makes it clear through which door the dead body is going to be taken, so then it's as if we're saving the other doors, or we're saving the items on the other side of those other doors, that the tumor is now not going to go through those doors, and it's only going to go through the door that has been decided upon that the dead body is going to be removed through that door. This is only going to be the case if the door that was decided upon is considered large enough, or if it's, let's say, not a door, but it's a window. Only if it's actually large enough to easily take out the dead body, or the piece of the dead body, through that opening, only then would it be defined as the opening through which the dead body is going to be removed. And the Mishnah says, Kazayas v'nameis, if there is a piece of flesh in that room the size of an olive, so then the size that the opening needs to be defined as the opening through which that piece of flesh is going to be removed, needs to be at least pisrei tefach, the opening needs to be at least the size of a tefach by a tefach. V'hameis, if there is a full dead body inside that room, then obviously a small opening which is a tefach by a tefach, the width of a fist, that's not large enough, and only if pisrei ba'arba tefachim, if its opening is 4x4 tefachim, can it be defined as the opening through which the dead body is going to be removed. If it's any smaller than that, then we can't view it already now as the opening through which the dead body is going to be removed, because it appears very small in relation to the space needed to remove the body. But be it as it may, those are the minimum sizes, lahatzil hatumah me'ala pesachim, to save the other openings and the other doors of the room from the tumah going through them. And now the Mishnah adds a crucial point, that all of this is with regards to the Midira Bonon concept of soif tumah lotzeis, that if the doors are closed, there aren't actually any openings which are currently open. All of the doors and windows are closed, but since the dead body is possibly going to be taken through those openings in the future, Midira Bonon, the tumor spreads through them. So for that, as soon as one of those openings has been defined as the opening through which the dead body or the piece of the dead body is going to be removed, and it's large enough, so then the tumor would no longer go through the other openings, which are currently closed. However, avalohoitzia tumor, but in terms of tumor actually being able to leave and escape now, meaning if there is an opening which is not closed up currently, already now it's actually open, b'feiseach tefach, if it is at least the size of a tefach by a tefach, then the tumor would escape there, mid'oiraisa, according to the Torah. There are two totally different ways of the tumor escaping. One is mid'oiraisa, if there is an opening that is currently open, That is, at least a tefach by a tefach, then the tumah would escape through that hole. There's another way for the tumah to escape, midrabbanon, if the openings are currently closed, but in the future they're going to be opened for the dead body to be taken through them. So then that's the midrabbanon concept of sof tumah lotzeis, and for that it helps to define one opening, that that's going to be the opening that in the future is going to actually be opened, and the dead body will be taken through there. I guess to avoid confusion, let's not call it an opening, because an opening does imply that already now it's open. So for now, we'll refer to it as an exit. An exit from the room, and it could be closed, it could be open. Mr. Zion, we have seen that Tumas Oyehel can really take on one of three forms. The classic Tumas Oyehel is where the dead body, or the piece of the dead body, is underneath the same roof as another item. And Tumas Oyehel would transfer the impurity to the other item which is underneath the same roof as the dead body. Now, there are also two other forms of Tumas Oyehel, which is when the dead body forms a roof over a person, or a person forms a roof over the dead body. So if the person is essentially underneath or on top of the dead body, or a different item, not necessarily a person, then the impurity would also be transferred. There is a fundamental difference, however, between the classic form of Tumas Oyehel and the last two forms. And that is what we're going to learn in this Mishnah, that for the classic form of Tumas Oyehel, there is a minimum size that the Oyehel itself, the roof, needs to be. And that is at least a tefach by a tefach. This is unlike the last two forms of this Tumas Oyehel. If, let's say, you have a very thin metal needle, which is directly above a dead body, even though the needle is obviously not a tefach by a tefach, it would nevertheless become tomei, because it's forming a roof on top of the dead body. So for now, we're going to discuss the first form of Tumas Oyehel, which is when the dead body is underneath the same roof as another item. And for this, we need the roof which is on top of the dead body and the other item to be considered to an Oyehel, a proper roof, tefach al tefach al rum tefach meruba, an item that is at least a tefach by a tefach, and it's got a cubic tefach underneath it, meaning it's at least a tefach raised from the ground, there's a tefach of space underneath it, maybe a satumah, that would transfer the tumah to all of the items underneath it, and as well as that, for chaitzitz v'nei tumah, it would also block impurity from traveling beyond it. The impurity cannot travel beyond the oyehel which is on top of it. Ketzad, how so? Now the Mishnah elaborates in great detail with different examples, and we're going to use some diagrams in this Mishnah. Bivshu komor tachas habayis, if there is a ditch which is dug underneath a house, and really this is used for sewage, and there is an opening from the floor of the house, and there is an exit where the sewage goes through outside of the house. And in general, the opening which is in the house, on the floor of the house, is kept closed in order that the smell won't enter into the house. And the Mishnah talks about a case where yesh b'pesach tefach, there is a space of a cubic tefach inside the ditch itself, which means that the top of the ditch, this sewage pipe essentially, is considered to be an oyehel. It forms a roof over at least a tefach cubed of space. The yesh b'tziyosu b'pesach tefach, and the exit on the other end of the pipe, which goes out of the house, is the same size, the entire pipe is the same size, and therefore it also has an opening at the end of it, which is at least a tefach by a tefach. Tumah b'soicha, if there is a source of impurity, at least the size of an olive of a dead body, inside this pipe or this ditch, habayis tohar, the items inside of the house would remain pure. And this is because, since the ditch is considered to be an oyehel, it blocks the impurity from traveling beyond the top of the oyehel. So it doesn't continue going upwards into the house itself. And likewise, tumah b'bayis, if there is a source of impurity, a dead body or a piece of a dead body inside the house, mashe b'soichoi, any items which are in the ditch underneath the house would be tohar, would be pure, because once again, since the ditch is considered to be an oyehel, it blocks any impurity from traveling through it. Now, one can still ask the question that there is an opening that goes from the floor of the house to the ditch. And it's true that currently it's closed, but at least midrabbanon, the tumah should go through that opening because of the concept of soif tumah latzeis, that if a source of impurity in the future is going to be removed through an exit from that room, from that oyehel, then already now the tumah travels through there. So since there is a exit, there's a way to get from the house to the pipe or from the pipe to the house, So Midrabbanan, the Tumah should travel from one to the other. For this, the Mishnah explains that no, Shederech HaTumah Lotzis. It's the general practice to remove the source of impurity. It's not the general thing to bring it into the house or into something else. One wants to get rid of the source of impurity, so he's going to take it out of the exit of the gutter outside the house. There's no reason why he would bring the source of impurity through that opening into the house, or vice versa. And therefore it's already clear that the source of impurity is going to go through the other exit of the pipe going outside of the house. Or if the source of impurity is in the house, it's clear that it's going to be taken out of the front door instead of being put into the gutter. Next case, yesh b'pesach tefach, if the gutter has, the pipe, the ditch, has a space of a cubic tefach within it, so therefore it's considered to be an oyhel. However, the pipe gets much more narrow at its exit, and ve'im bitzi also b'sach tefach, at the very end of the pipe where it goes out of the house, there is less than a tefach of space. In this case, even though it's clear that the person would generally take the source of impurity out through the other end of the pipe and not through the house, in this case, the exit through the other end of the pipe is too small. So therefore the concept of Seif Tumah Lotzeis applies to all of the exits from the pipe. In this case, the other exit of the pipe into the house. So HaTumah B'Soichoi, if there is a source of impurity, a piece of a dead body inside the pipe, HaBayis Tomei, the items inside of the house would become Tomei Midrabbanan because of the concept of Seif Tumah Lotzeis. That really the only exit which is large enough from the pipe for the impurity to leave is the exit which goes into the house. However, Tumah B'Bayis, if there is a dead body or a part of the dead body inside of the house, then Mashal B'Soichoi Tohar, that which is inside of the ditch will remain pure, because in this case, we still have the idea that the dead body is certainly going to be taken out of the front door, and it's not going to be put into the pipe. Shederech HaTumah Lotzeis, because in general people try to get rid of the impurity. They don't bring it into other items and other rooms, and since the house has a door which is large enough to be considered a exit through which the Tumah can leave, it would go through there, and it wouldn't go into the gutter. Third case of the Mishnah, if there isn't a space of a cubic tefach in the ditch, and therefore it has not got the status of a separate oihel, and as well as that, the exit at the end of the pipe also is smaller than a tefach by a tefach. Over here we have a concept of Tumah Ratzutza, which we've come across once already, which states that if there is a roof on top of a source of impurity, and there is less than a space of a tefach in between the roof and the source of impurity, then the impurity goes upwards and downwards in a straight line, and would go through the roof which is on top of the dead body. It would continue going upwards. And therefore the Mishnah says, Tumah B'Soichoi, if there is a piece of a dead body which is a source of impurity inside the pipe, HaBayis Tomei, items inside of the house would become impure. And it's important to note that not only the items which are directly above the actual source of impurity in the pipe, not only those would become Tomei, but any item in the entire room over there would become Tomei. Because once the Tumah goes upwards and enters into the house, so now there is Tumah in the house underneath a roof. And it therefore spreads through the entire room because it's all underneath a particular roof. And that's why any item inside of the house would become Tomei. And Tumah B'Bayis, if there is a piece of a dead body inside the house, then over here, Mashal B'Soichoi Tomei, items which are inside of the pipe would also become Tomei. Because to the extent that a real oyhel is not created by the pipe, so you just view it to be an extension of the floor of the house, but it's all really like one oihel, it's underneath the same roof of the house, and therefore it would become Tomei. The last part of the Mishnah talks about a naturally made oihel. Echad shechor shecharuhu mayim ishrotzim, a hole that has been formed via water, perhaps eroding the side of a river, or if different bugs or insects, like a mole made a hole, and now there is a particular roof in that area, or salt, or similar substances caused a particular material to erode, or some versions of the Mishnah read, a pile of stones which are piled one on top of the other, and because the stones are not totally smooth, there are certain holes in that pile of stones, and there is essentially a roof over that area. And a pile of beams, once again, which are not totally straight, and therefore there are some spaces there which have a sort of a roof on top of it. Even if a space of a cubic tefach has been produced, at least according to the first opinion, the truth is it is considered to be an oihel. However, Rabbi Yehuda says, "Kol oihel she'ena osim bidei adam eino oihel." Any oihel that is not being made intentionally and deliberately by a person does not have the status of an oihel, halachically, and this is learnt from Pesukim. However, if there is a significant opening, it's not just a small cubic tefach, but there's a real large area with something on top of it, then even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it would be considered an oihel, and therefore, umayde bashkifim uvasloim, Rabbi Yehuda agrees in the case of large holes in rocks that have been produced by water, or natural openings in mountains, in rocky areas. Since over there are significant large areas which have something on top of them, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that would be considered an oihel.